Welcome to Board Games Are for Losers, a podcast where two friends with the same name talk about everything board game related and introduce new players to the hobby. And now, here are your hosts, the biggest losers in all of board gaming, Darren and Darren.
Welcome to Board Games Are for Losers. I'm your host, Darren.
And I'm also Darren.
And on today's episode, we are going to be discussing our time at PAX Unplugged 2019, which was held the first weekend in December of 2019 in Philadelphia. And joining us to help us discuss that, we have a new guest who was with us at PAX. His name is Andrew. Andrew, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
So, Deron, as you know, but I think a lot of our listeners don't know, a lot of people who we introduce to gaming, like Andrew, become losers, right, Andrew? We would agree that you're a loser, right?
He didn't tell me this was going to be a part of it.
he's running away.
He's not agreeing to that. But I'd say for every one guest that we have on Look Who's a Loser Now that we introduced to gaming, there's probably two or three more that we just introduced to gaming, you know, outside of the podcast and convert them into being big gamers.
Right. We can't keep up with getting people on the feature segment because it is a lot of work and a lot of time commitment, and we wind up playing games with people randomly, or like the case of Danique, who just started listening to the podcast and then quickly exceeded 300 games in her collection and now goes to every convention in the United States. Yes. It was too impossible to catch up. I think the funny thing with Andrew was, I think we discussed this in our Double Decon recap last year, is how this is mainly driven by his wife Heather, who's really into the games, and Andrew's into it but kind of more reluctantly, and they had left the con and then drove back like 4 hours to come back for the last day. And that was, they were hooked. They were losers from there on out.
That's true. That is
definitely
true.
A spur of the moment decision.
So, Andrew, as you know, I keep track of a lot of our gaming sessions. I think you do now too. You have the BG Stats app and.
I do. Does that change anything?
Oh, that makes you a hardcore loser.
that's hardcore.
How
it was
many?
Just such a good deal.
If you had to guess, how many games do you think you've played with me?
Oh my gosh, I don't know. I want to say, I don't know, maybe 40.
Wow, I have.
Wait, do I get to guess?
Yeah. Okay, Deron.
I was gonna guess 50 to 60.
It's actually 74.
Whoa.
Wow.
All right.
So of those games that we've introduced you to, which is your favorite so far?
That's pretty tough. Part of me wants to say Orleans. I had a really good time with that one. But if I was going to go based off of what I seem to play the most often and continuously have a great time, I would say Love Letter.
Wow. Both are good. And the fact that you bought Orleans, correct?
I did.
Bought that. That's pretty significant because that's not really a lightweight introductory game. And you went from zero to Orleans within a year, less than a year.
Yeah.
But you started buying games pretty quickly. So
I did. I actually bought a game a long time ago and then never played it. And then a year later, we finally opened it up and started playing, which was Survive. Also, I might add, that was because of one of your early episodes with Brody talking about it. It sounded like a good time.
Oh, wait, so you had bought Survive like a year before and never played it? And then
I did, yeah. I bought it for Heather for last Christmas, and then we didn't play it until about 3 weeks ago.
Wow. That's interesting. Wow. It circles back to Brody's episode. That's perfect. That's a mean game to get for someone for Christmas. That game is, that game is nasty.
But we will count, cutthroat. We'll count that as a win for us.
Sure.
So also in this episode, for our listeners to know, in case the sound quality is different, this is our first episode recording with everybody remotely. So we're all online. We're in different locations for the first time. So we're going to test this out, see how it goes. So it might sound a little different.
And part of that reason is because I've actually taken a restraining order out against you, and we're not allowed to be within 500 yards of each other.
Well,
when you say you,
it's just everybody.
It was eventually going to happen.
It was eventually going to happen, for sure.
So, Dayron, why don't you tell us about what is PAX Unplugged?
It's a board gaming, a tabletop convention that was a spinoff of the old Penny Arcade, the PAX conventions, which were video game conventions. Mm-hmm. So PAX Unplugged is now in its third year, and it's been hosted in Philadelphia at the Philadelphia Convention Center each of the 3 years. I would say that it's gotten progressively bigger. Mm-hmm. In attendance and size, although they don't release attendance numbers, so I don't know if there's any way to be sure. But
I think last year the word going around was that it was about 30,000 last year. I don't think that's an official number, but I think that's what people estimated. 30,000.
It's hard to say. I mean, the space they were in, the main expo hall, was huge this year. I think it was way bigger than before, and they utilize the space well. So some of the things you do there's a huge vendor area where, you know, companies set up shop and sell games or demo games, things like that. And then there's also an open area where you can free play. There's an area where you can play first, it's called First Look. You play newly released games that you really can't get anywhere else. And there's all sorts of different activities around. I think what was different this year was the rooms where they had like breakout things, like they had old cardboard, like old games you could play. I didn't know where those were. They weren't easy to find as in the previous years where they were kind of right off the main hallway. So
yeah, and every year, I mean, we're lucky. It's right in our backyard, so we basically could walk there from work. I mean, that's what we do. So we don't have to travel for this one. We just got lucky. But I think the focus of PAX Unplugged is that there's a lot of variety. It's not focused on open gaming or tournaments or vendors. There's a ton of different stuff to do. And I think, you know, that's the thing. If you want to paint miniatures, or if you want to learn how to be a better DM for your role-playing games, there's also a lot of role-playing games going on, a ton of that. So the idea is it's not just focused on a specific thing. Like when we go to the World Board Gaming Championships, it's focused on competition. This has something for everybody.
Yeah, I think it does a good job of mixing what I imagine the Gen Con and the Origins to be, where it's really heavily focused on product display and selling merchandise, and you know, mixes it with that open play and tournament play aspect that we love at the WBCs. And it kind of, and then throws in all these other activities that you get to do.
There's a lot of stuff. It's overwhelming. And Andrew, this was your first PAX Unplugged. We forgot to mention we dragged you to WBC last year, or this year, this last summer. So that was your first big convention, and this is your first time at PAX. So this is really only your second board game convention, so we're kind of interested in getting your take on it.
Wait, we're not counting Double Decon?
Well, no, that's not quite as big.
We're internationally known.
Not yet. So let's talk about some of our favorite experiences at PAX Unplugged 2019. Oh, I forgot to mention it's only Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It's only 3 days. It's only the weekend. And what the ticket for the whole weekend is, what, $75?
Yeah, $70. I think
$70. Yeah. So, and that gives you access to pretty much everything. There's a few, I think, events that they charge extra for, but not really, not many. So, so it's 3 day weekend in Philadelphia, about $70. Talking about some of our favorite experiences, Friday, starting at around noon, Andrew and I went over and we just spent, I don't know, 4 hours looking through the vendor area. 3-4 hours just walking around, seeing what was for sale. Andrew, what did you think about the vendor area? Is it everything you expected, or what did you expect going in?
I honestly had no idea what to expect. It was pretty overwhelming, though, for sure. And it's crazy because I really didn't. It didn't feel like we spent 3 or 4 hours walking around there, because there was so much that where it felt like we kind of glossed over, and we didn't get to spend much time, you know, as we were looking through. So to consider the fact that we spent that long and still didn't get everything is pretty crazy.
Yeah, I think if you don't systematically walk the aisles, there was on Sunday when I went back, I spent a lot of time walking around and demoing games. There was a booth I completely missed that I was actually interested in, and Danique wound up going back and buying some games. But I was like, how did I miss this? It was right in the center. And it's just, if you don't walk a grid, you're going to miss something. It is overwhelming. There's a lot of stuff there.
Yeah, we kind of walked up and down the aisles, but it's crowded, but not unmanageable. But I think by the end, we just kind of glossed over a few rows because we were getting worn out. And I think the other interesting thing is it's a mix of a ton of different things. It's not just people just selling board games. It's like a lot of the major publishers are demoing their new games. But then there's a ton, which I like, a ton of like board gaming accessory type of stuff, like just stuff you really wouldn't find elsewhere. A lot of like the fancy dice. I think what really surprised me was how many vendors were selling custom board game tables.
Right, like $5,000 tables, right?
Yeah, they were $5,000. They had a lot of them set up there, so you could sit at these tables and, you know, drool on them. They were pretty. They were pretty.
Is that how you test a table?
Well, it was pretty amazing. Like,
well, it has that effect.
Yeah. You wanted one of these tables, and then you look at the price tag, and like, whoa.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Did you happen to see the vendor that was demoing On Tour, which is a game you've kickstarted before? They had a poker table, and so it's a roll and write game, so you can crowd 8-10 people around the table. They would roll these giant dice in a craps table.
Right.
It looked like it was a craps table. They roll the dice in there, and everybody's standing around the edge writing on the on their board. It was really cool. Definitely like caught the eye. It was a good presentation.
Yeah, there's a lot of that kind of stuff there that's meant to draw you in, and it's fun to go and check everything out. There was like some vendors that had dice made out of any material you wanted. Gems, metals. There was like titanium dice that you got like a set of 6 for like $200.
How many did you buy?
Oh, none.
Oh.
Well, that's a good question. When it comes to purchases, I think, and Danique's not in the show today, but I think she made the most purchases. I know by the time we got there on Friday, and it opens up Friday at 10. We got there at like noon or 1 o'clock, maybe 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
And Danique had already made one trip back to her car to drop off her purchases.
I did not know that.
She did say she was most excited about her playmat for the game Silver, which she loves, and her special Lords of Waterdeep meeples.
I think if you're gonna buy something there, I mean, the reality is most of the games, flat out games, you're gonna find there are more expensive than they are gonna be from any online vendor.
Yeah.
Which makes sense because they got to pay the cost to set up their booth and everything like that. But I think if you're looking for something out of the ordinary, like the playmat or the meeples, I, for instance, bought another one of the prints, the art prints from Ryan Goldsberry, who does the art for the Tim Fowers games.
Right.
So that to me was like, oh, that was really cool because I bought one before and it cost a ton of money because they had to ship it. And this was like $10.
Yeah.
So I think if you're going to look to purchase things that are not ordinary, just regular games, you're going to find a lot to buy.
And especially if you're looking for the newest games that are hard to get online, like because they're sold out everywhere. They had those, so you could get those. You pay full price, but you know, if that's the only way you can get them, I think it's worth it. I mean, we're not really into buying the newest game as soon as it comes out so much. So,
yeah, I'd be curious to talk to some of the the companies and see how they did. I mean, in talking with Dr. Finn, and we'll get into that later. I think he sold most of his merchandise that was there. The booth that was selling Parks Keymaster games, their stuff was flying off the shelves.
Yeah.
It's unreal. And they weren't cutting any huge deals or anything. It was just people saw it and they wanted it.
And I think a lot of people go there just for the vendor section, and that's one of the big draws. And I thought it was fun. I thought it was fun just browsing. So the vendors was one of the good experiences.
Well, as far as the vendors go, I'd be curious how Azul did, because I've never seen so many boxes of Azul before in my life.
Right. It was, I think it was the Cool Stuff Inc. booth that was kind of in the middle. I think it was. I'm not sure which booth it was.
Yes.
But they had every, there's three versions of Azul now, and they had like 100 copies of each one. It was crazy.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I don't get it. I mean, it's obviously a good game.
It's a great game, yeah.
But how many copies are you going to sell of a game that you can pretty much get anywhere? Like, it's not a hard game to get.
I agree. I did, Andrew, you're a good point. I did notice that too. I'm like, what is going on with all the Azul? Like, you mean you feel like, I got to buy this because it's my face.
That's why they do it.
Yeah, it's probably true.
So one of the things I wanted to do this year, we talked about it, I think, in the recap last year, is I wanted to make use out of, like, hey, I'm paying $70 to go for 3 days. Like, I don't want to just go around and buy games and open gaming. So I made a concerted effort to do other things, and I had a blast. Like, the first thing I'll hit on is the miniatures painting. Mm-hmm. So they have an area where you just pick up a miniature. I think it's a Warhammer miniature, and I don't know anything about miniatures games, but I think that's what it was. And there's just racks of paint. You just take a miniature and you just go paint it. And, like, maybe they could have provided a little more instruction, but I just...
Well, after seeing your painting, they probably should have provided more instruction.
I think I made people cry. It was... you know what? My kids loved my miniatures.
Okay.
Arguably, they were terrible. Yeah. I think it's
no, they definitely were terrible.
It's all. I guess we'll post a picture of.
No, they, we'll have to post it. It's pretty entertaining.
Well, I think Howie's was okay.
Well, yes. Funny you should mention Howie, because I was actually at Howie's house last night doing some gaming, and now he's become obsessed with painting. So he's now 3D printing random things, like the guy from Futurama and painting.
Oh, which one?
who's the main guy?
Fry,
yeah. So he printed out Fry. He printed out Yoda. It's ridiculous. I asked his wife how she felt about the painting, and she just shook her head.
Well, this sounds like a whole separate episode.
Yeah. Yes.
We need to circle back after we finish this.
Well, Dayron, after you painted and got that experience, what did you think about the whole painting experience? Is it something you would pick up, or?
It is not. I think it requires way too much patience. I'm not an artistic guy. I think I'd be interested in actually playing the miniatures games, seeing, because they have a lot of big tables set up next, right outside that area with, like, huge terrain and, like, battlefields.
Yeah, pretty cool-looking stuff.
I did a little bit of that when I was, like, a kid. I think I mentioned in way back in Episode Zero, a game called, like, Battle Masters. It was, like, this 6-foot mat where there are orcs and goblins shooting at each other and whatever. So I kind of want to try something like that, but I don't want to paint. I don't want to. I don't think a society wants me to paint.
No, definitely not.
that hurts.
All right, so I also, like Dayron said, okay, this year I'm going to try to do more stuff at PAX outside of just playing games and buying stuff, and I did very little. You know, part of that we'll get into, because we did a lot of open gaming, and Andrew came and Heather came for the first time, so we ended up doing a lot of gaming. But I didn't, and Friday we did spend a lot of time in the vendor area. So when it comes to other stuff, Dayron, since I didn't do much else.
I'll just take it from here.
What else did you do?
All right, so here we go. Here's what else I did. I think one of the funniest things was going to the Dice Tower show.
Okay.
So Dice Tower, I'm sure for most people listening, know them. They're kind of the like main name in board gaming podcasts and board gaming media. And they do a live show at PAX. They do their top 10 or top whatever. And
this year, did go to that last year.
Okay. So yeah. you did yeah. see that last year.
I did
year.
See that last year, yeah.
And, you know, I listened to the podcast, so it was cool seeing them do it live. And what the funny part was is that Howie, and Eric and I went, and Howie's like, what are we going to do? I was like, watch the Dice Tower. Like, who is that? Like, they do the podcast. Like, they're pretty well known. Just come. And like 20 minutes into it, he goes, why are we here? This is so dumb. He's like, we're just watching people talk. I'm like, oh my God. So he actually got up and left. Yeah. And meanwhile, Danique was knitting the whole time. But she actually likes the show. So I thought that was a cool experience that you're not going to get anywhere else.
Yeah. And I kind of agree with Howie because I got up and left last year as well because I just wanted to check it out. But it's cool that option's there. Like, you know, like I like the podcast as well. And it was cool to see it, but I'm like, I'll just watch the podcast or the YouTube video of it. Like, I, you know, for me, that would not why I go to PAX, but it's cool. There's a lot, and that's just one of many events that were there.
Right. Oh, yeah. So the other funny part, I'm sorry, I forgot this. We were waiting in line to go in, and there's a guy in front of us, and you know, granted, in these shows, you're going to come across people that don't get out a lot, and they're, mm-hmm. they're not the best socially, and that's fine. Like, this is a good venue for them.
Yep.
But this guy was very excited, and he was very talkative to us, and he said, he's waiting to go in, and he said, last year, I met Tom Vassell, who's the guy who runs the Dice Tower, and I got so nervous that I forgot all the questions I wanted to ask him. And I just... kind of looked at him. I said, oh, yeah, that's, you know, maybe you should consider writing down your questions next time. And he whipped out a list from his pocket and said, I did. And he was so excited. I don't know if he ever got to ask the questions this year.
Well, I'm sure a lot of our listeners would get just as excited if they met us. So,
yeah, I think they would go silent because they're probably just running away.
They're probably disappointed.
They're just like, oh, it's you.
All right, he did the Dice Tower show. I did do that last year. I will talk about, and Andrew, this is the one thing one activity we spent the most time on was the open gaming or what they call it, the free gaming in PAX, which is just like they have, I don't know, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of tables and chairs set up and a gaming library that's just open. You grab a game. We brought a lot of our own games. You grab a game, you sit down and you just play. We spent, after shopping on Friday, we spent Friday evening, open gaming and then, all day Saturday pretty much. So, for me, it's a fun activity. What'd you think about the open gaming, Andrew, especially compared to WBC's?
Well, I had a blast with the open gaming. The environment was a little, I don't know. I guess I preferred WBC's environment.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like we had to continually guard all of our seats because they're, they were at risk of being taken.
Yes.
But I got to say that the game library that PAX had was incredible.
Yeah. And that's new this year. They did improve it. Remember, Dayron, the first year, or maybe was it last year, we went to the game library, and it was... all the good games were gone, so we didn't get to play. I mean, we brought games we wanted to play, but the library was kind of weak. This year, the library was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think I from what I saw, it was good. There was games that you wanted to play there for sure. Again, I mean, I think if you really wanted to play New Hotness, they had that section for you. So I think that kept people away from there that were, picking up all the games. They had the first look area was vastly expanded from what I recall over previous years. So
yeah,
that might've helped.
Yeah. And then the other issue Andrew mentioned is like, it was crowded. Like the whole time, especially on Saturday, like, you know, you struggled to find a section where you could find four seats together. And you were afraid to leave because somebody would swoop in and steal your seats. I did feel this year the vendor area was less crowded because they spread it out more. Mm-hmm. But the gaming area, the open gaming seemed just as big. It just was more, I think there's more attendees this year.
Yeah, I think so too. And that's kind of why I avoided doing a lot of open gaming, because I was like, well, I can do this anywhere. It's not as comfortable. It's a little more smelly.
Yeah.
Like it's just not, I go to WBCs to do just the hardcore gaming, just nonstop. But, you know, something I really wanted to focus on this year was demoing games. And I really think I did a lot of that. Like I walked around and some of the booths, like I think, Pandasaurus Games, I just demoed all of their games. They had like six different games and I just was like, oh, that was good. All right, I'm going to do this one. I thought that was one thing I really wanted to focus on. I wanted to hit on a few of my highlights, if I may.
Yes, sure. So the game demos is something you do in the vendor area. So what were your favorite games that you demoed? Because Andrew and I demoed one.
Right. Actually, so I demoed two.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, wow. We demoed that other game. Remember, it was kind of like air hockey without the air hockey.
Oh, Clask. You're right. We did. All right, that counts. You're right. We did demo two. We actually played that for like 15 minutes.
All right, so I just did a quick count. I demoed 12 games.
Wow.
I think so. It was on purpose. Like Hal and I were walking around doing that. So I think the we'll talk about this another time. But Dr. Finn's new one that's coming out on Kickstarter, School of Sorcery, two player. Game played with Howie and I beat him, so it's obviously an amazing game if I can beat Howie. So
absolutely,
that's a good one. We're going to hit on that when we talk about our interview with Dr. Finn. I think the best other game I played, there was this area. It wasn't in the vendor hall. It was a demo area for Japanese games, I think. And we know how I mix up my Japanese phrases or Japanese countries and Asian. Yeah.
Easily confusable.
Easily confusable between Spanish and Japanese.
Yes.
But I'm fairly certain this was Japanese games that were not available in the U.S. And there was this one, it was a completely handmade out of wood, and it was called Bronze Leaf. And you're basically pulling wooden petals out of a bag and putting them on one of three flower petals. And it was a good game. Like, Danique and I played a full game. It was an interesting game that I would consider purchasing, but it's all handmade and hand-painted, and I think it's like $200. So it was really cool to play, and the guy who was there demoing it was just really enthusiastic. It was a fun area to be in, and I think I want to spend some time there next time, because nobody was there. Nobody was hanging out there.
Huh.
And they weren't selling anything.
Yeah. They were just showing a game?
Showing games. I don't think they were from a company. I think it was just a guy showing games.
Wow.
So interesting. I like that. And then in that same area, we also played a game called Crappy Robot Battles. And, well, at least I think that was the translation. I don't know. But this was a Galaxy Trucker meets Patchwork. So you were quickly assembling Tetris-like pieces on your board to build your robot, and then it was sort of like programmable movement where then how you assemble the pieces would cause your robots in the arena to move, and your goal was to just push the players out, like just kind of like a robot battle. Like your goal is to push another player out by the way you arranged your Tetris pieces, and you had to do it fast. There was a timer. So
okay.
Galaxy Trucker and Patrick are two of my favorite games, so this was naturally a hit for me. But it was bizarre. It really made no sense, but it was fun. So
yeah.
I like that, and I think one other bizarre game that I'll hit on was a game called Mental Blocks, and this was Pandasaurus Games, and it was like not life-size blocks, but like giant blocks that you had in front of you, and you basically, like four people are playing. I'm given a card, and I see what the stack of blocks look like from one perspective. So, like, say the right side of the table. So I can see maybe an orange square and a blue triangle behind it. Right. But then you have a card that shows you the perspective from a different angle. And mm-hmm. because you're looking at it from a different angle, you see something else. And we, based on what we can see on our individual cards, have to work together to assemble these different shaped blocks in the right configuration so that we solve the puzzle. It was really interesting. I don't know that I'd ever buy it, but it was like a pretty interesting exercise to try.
Yes. Okay. It sounds like a cool activity, like a team building thing or something like that.
Right. Right. I played with two random people that showed up. We actually solved it like the base level one in like 3 minutes. You have a 10-minute time frame. Huh. But it's really cool.
That's so cool. That's neat. Something different.
Exactly. And that's what I wanted to do there. And I feel like I accomplished demoing bizarre games.
Well, Andrew and I failed because we only demoed one game.
I told you guys.
But, okay, so in fairness, though, the one game we demoed was, it's kind of a popular mainstream game now. It was Minecraft Builders and Biomes. So it's a game that gets is done well, from what I can understand. And it actually, I went in thinking I wanted to buy this for my son, who's 8 years old and love Minecraft. So we sat down and we got to play an entire game. And we played a full game, and it was a three-player game because there was a guy teaching to us, and he did a great job, and it was a lot of fun. Andrew, what did you think about the demoing experience, and then what did you think about the game?
So the experience I thought was great. That guy was, you could tell he had played the game. He knew the game very well and was very used to explaining it and helping people get through it. It wasn't that complicated, but some of the icons I thought made it a little difficult to keep track of. Like I kept trying to compare, or I kept looking at different parts of the card because each tile had like three icons to tell you what stage you were on or whatever. Like, and you were trying to match them, and they kind of looked similar.
Yeah,
because they were in that Minecraft style of art, and so
the pixel art. Yeah,
the pixelized.
Yeah,
so I thought it was pretty good overall, but There was definitely a bit of a learning curve that was, to me, it felt primarily due to like a blurring of the lines in a way.
Yeah, see, I agree. So I had a fun experience demoing the game. I decided not to buy it for two reasons. I think it's a little more complicated than an 8 year old. I mean, he could probably play it, but it would be a little too involved for an 8 year old. The second thing I felt, so it was $40, and I felt for the price, the components were pretty weak. I felt they spent their money on the IP, the intellectual property. I'm sure they had to pay to get the Minecraft. And unfortunately, I didn't think it was a bad game, but like Andrew, I had problems with they're trying to slam this pixel art in, which made the game a little more difficult to understand all the icons because they wanted everything to be coherent. And it was. I didn't feel like I was playing Minecraft. There was no board. It was just you laid some tiles out and made your own board, and they were pretty thin tiles.
What kind of a game is it?
It's really hard to explain. I mean, the cool thing was there was a cube of wooden blocks that you pull from to get resources. It was neat. It was interesting. It's hard to explain.
Nice.
Yeah. You move around this map and fight monsters, but
in the grid. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was almost like a deck building in a way where you had to, because you had to fight the monsters, you had to just turn over three tiles or whatever. And
yeah, you had to get them in your deck, basically. I mean, it was a decent game. I felt if they would have spent $20 less per game on the IP and $20 more on the components and put a different theme on it, I would really like the game. Well, you know, I it was one where just the components were lacking because probably the intellectual property. And the problem is the intellectual property is geared towards younger kids, but the game I felt was geared towards adults. And yeah, it was interesting. I mean, I didn't dislike it. I had a fun time playing it, but I certainly wouldn't buy it.
What is a biome?
I don't know.
Is that part of the Minecraft universe?
Biome?
Yeah, but like it says Minecraft Builders and Biomes. What is a biome?
I think it's a Japanese word.
Sayonara. Nice.
But that is the only game that we demoed. But we had fun. I mean, it was a cool experience to do the demo. And the guy who demoed, it was great. Like, we had a lot of fun playing. One other big thing experience we had, which was a game, Deron, that we played. Danique actually signed us up for.
Blood on the Clock Tower.
Yeah.
So this is a game that's currently being produced from a Kickstarter, if I'm not mistaken. And It is, if you've ever played Werewolf, it is in that theme. And I famously had a negative experience with Werewolf. So it was a little bit, that's when the guy called me a moron.
Yes.
which, you know, is not unusual in my life, but it's usually people I know.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that another time.
Yes, that's right.
Blood in the Clock Tower is essentially a new take on Werewolf, mm-hmm. or a different take on Werewolf, where we all have hidden roles. Someone is an evil person, like a bad guy, demon. And he has a demon, and he has a henchman, and everybody else is good.
A minion. Yes.
Okay, so I don't know the terminology, clearly.
Well, I think the big twist on this is in Werewolf, some people are just villagers and they don't really have a role, but in Blood on a Clock Tower, everybody has a role that does something.
Right.
And even when you're voted out of the game, you can still contribute.
Yes, and I think those are two big differences, is that everybody's role was something.
Yes.
Some of them were a little less, like it would be something that kicked in at the beginning of the game, say you got to see some information about another player at the beginning of the game, and then you didn't have any more special powers. But a lot of them were ongoing things. And then, most importantly, when you got killed for whatever reason or voted out, you didn't have to call anyone a moron. You got to still play the game. you continued to be able to vote. I thought that was interesting.
You get one more vote, right? After.
You can influence people's opinions, and then you get one, kind of last ditch vote to try to have your side win.
So, and the one thing we didn't mention here is at PAX, they provide a GM, somebody who runs the game for you. So you just sign up, you show up, somebody teaches the game and runs the whole session, and it's provided for you. And so we signed up. What did we have? Eight players? Eight or nine?
Yeah, we had nine, I think.
It was all of our friends and then two people we didn't know, which, if I recall, their names were Zach and Mariana, potentially.
From New York, yeah.
Yeah, they were really fun to play with, so we had a great group. Shout out to them for playing with us. But so it was mostly people we knew and then them, and the GM was good. And we played at 9 o'clock at night, I think. So they put you in a little, it's not even a room, they have a makeshift room in the middle of the venue, and you sit in there. Andrew, you've played One Night Ultimate Werewolf, and now Blood on the Clock Tower. What did you think about Blood on the Clock Tower experience?
I'd say I liked it. So, after we had immediately finished, I wasn't sure what I thought about it. But then last weekend we played Werewolf a few times, and I kept getting the werewolf over and over again, and I realized what I liked about Blood on the Clock Tower because there the bad person, the demon, had extra information, so it was a little bit easier to get through it, and they could do more. In Werewolf, it's very easy to catch somebody in a lie, and once it happens, it basically just turns into like a deflection match, and you have very little chance of getting through it. So
as the person who was the demon in my first
game, Deron was the demon,
I felt like I had a chance because they gave me the information I got was that two specific roles out of a list of 30 I knew were not in the game. I knew no players were those roles, so I could pretend to be that player when I needed to. That was extremely helpful.
Yeah.
I based my whole strategy around that, and I waited and I waited and I waited, and I unveiled that. The only reason I really got tripped up was because Danique heard me, I stumbled upon the description of my role. Yeah. And it just was because I forgot exactly what it was, but I stumbled over two words. She was like, well, clearly you weren't that. I was like, no, I was just, I didn't remember. But I agree. I thought it was a lot of fun being that role. I didn't feel like at a disadvantage playing my first time because I had all the information laid out in front of me and some extra helpful hints.
Yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of that, I feel like you tried to kill me one night or during that whole thing.
I wanted
to talk about that.
I did try to kill you. And that's when my plan backfired because you had some role where when I tried to kill you, it just randomly killed another person. The GM decided. And I had this
the mayor.
I had this perfect plan where once you died, I could reveal my what was my fake role and nobody would have had any idea. And then as soon as the other person died, it all fell apart.
Yeah.
Pretty great.
I think it's a great game. I'm kind of on, not, I wouldn't say on the fence, but I think I'm divided because Werewolf and One Night Ultimate Werewolf especially are better for more casual players. This is geared towards more advanced players and especially for players who play over and over again. So if I had a game group and, you know, once a week the same people came over, this is something we might play at the end of the night. But to just introduce it to casual players, there's a lot of the roles are... It's cool that everybody's involved. And like Andrew said, like when you're the bad guy, the werewolf, you have a little more information. That's cool, but it's also a lot... The learning curve is a steeper. Like you say, Daron, like you didn't... The roles aren't as straightforward. So I really liked it, but I think it's for a slightly different audience than Werewolf, or maybe people who played Werewolf so much they're tired of it. Yeah. This is the next step up.
It's a prerequisite.
Yes. Yeah, I do think that. I absolutely.
Yeah, if somebody said, which one do you want to play right now? It definitely would be Blood on the Clock Tower.
But yeah. But it depends who we're playing with, though. I think that's the key. Like, if we're playing like a double decon, I don't think it would go over great because a lot of people are like...
Well, we also don't know the game.
And yeah, so then you need somebody who knows the game well.
Somebody has to drive the game. Yep.
Yep. So that was a cool experience, though. It was a lot of fun. It was great that you can go to a place like PAX, and I'm just going to sign up. And I went in. Danique had played it before. The three of us had never played it before.
Yeah, I think 7 out of the 9 people hadn't played.
Never played it, and we had a blast going in there because we were going to PAX. You're able to get in on that. Somebody teaches you the game. It was great. So that was a cool experience.
Also, so I think our count is up to 3 now for demos.
Oh, what else?
That doesn't count as a demo.
Well, I guess
it's not out yet.
I guess it counts. Yeah, that counts. We'll count that.
Fine, my count's up to 13 then.
Whatever. Oh, I see how it is.
So let's talk about some of our, in addition to the demos, what are your favorite games that you actually got to play at PAX? Daron, you had a few, so what do you think?
One I wanted to mention was in the first look area, and I think you guys had gone home already. It was the first night. We played this game called Paranormal Detectives.
Okay.
So the premise of this game is one person is kind of running it. They're a ghost that's been, and they've been murdered, or they've been killed in some way, and they have a story behind it. So in this case, spoiler alert, I was like a window washer that fell off my window ledge because my boss was too cheap to buy good equipment, and I fell to the ground and I died. So there's basically...
That'll
teach you. So there's 5 things. It's a who, what, where, when, and why.
Okay.
And all the other players are trying to guess the who, what, where, when, and why by asking me questions, and I have to give clues through these wacky things. Like one method is like basically a Ouija board. Like I have to move, I have to kind of arrange these things in groups of letters and see if you can spell out something. So like, who killed you? And I have to try to get them to guess by picking out groups of letters. Like one might have ABC. Think of like a telephone where, you know, the number one is ABC. And so I say, that's the first letter. The second letter might be D, E, or F. And you have to try to kind of figure out that way. Another way I give clues was by taking 2 pieces of kind of string, like waxy string, and making something. So they said, like, well, how did you die? So I took one of the things and, like, made a tall skyscraper. And then the other one I fashioned into like a person, like leaning off of the skyscraper. So I can't talk. I just have to, I just have to make these things. And the funniest one is you draw on someone's back with your finger.
Huh.
Super creepy, especially when I got to do it to Steve from Jay's Basement, who I don't know very well. But you basically just there, you know, they ask a question like, who killed you? And I have to draw something on that person's back.
Huh.
With my finger, without saying anything. I had a lot of fun as the ghost, and I kept on asking people, I'm like, are you guys having fun trying to guess? And they were, I don't know.
Yeah.
It didn't seem as fun. Like, I enjoy games like that because it was like being creative, being funny. It seemed like everybody got a decent kick out of it, and then the goal is to be like the first person to guess the exact method of how you got killed.
Huh. That sounds interesting. Yeah. Sounds like something I want to try out. I don't know if I'd buy it.
But. I don't think it would be a buy game. I think it would be a fun one to try. And again, with the right crew, it's an interesting experience.
What did you draw on his back?
Ooh, I don't know. Probably just a penis.
Makes sense.
I think with Steve, I kept it pretty kosher. I think I did... I want to say I wanted to do Eric's back or Howie's back, and then I was just a little more aggressive. I don't remember what I did, but it was pretty funny. Maybe I like kind of caressed their head while drawing on his back. Now, hence the restraining order.
Andrew, of the games you got to play, not necessarily new games, but what did you have the most fun with? What were your favorite gaming experience at PAX?
I'd say one of my standouts was definitely the Architects and Raiders combo.
Yes, I had Raiders, that as mine as well. So perfect.
I loved playing Raiders, and I wonder.
So our listeners know he's talking about the Shem Phillips games. On Friday night, we played Architects of the West Kingdom, and then because Andrew liked it on Saturday, I brought Raiders of the North Sea. And me, you, and Heather played Raiders of the North Sea twice.
Yes.
So, and it was awesome. So those are the games, and
Deron played it the second time as well.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and so I am curious what I would have thought had I played Raiders first and then Architects.
Me too.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that would have changed my overall feeling about it, but now I love Raiders. I almost bought it. It's in my cart still.
Okay.
But I haven't pulled the trigger on it.
You will. Just give it time. So the interesting thing is Architects of the West Kingdom, that was your first worker placement game, really, that you played. What did you think about that on Friday night, like playing that?
I thought it was awesome. At first, it took me a little while just to try and figure out what was going on, and I was trying not to listen to the crazy conversations that were happening off to the side.
Right, yes, because it was crowded and there was other stuff going on.
And so I was trying to focus and figure out what it was I was trying to do and how best to make my plays and everything, but I thought it was a lot of fun.
How did you think the two games compared? Because they're in the same series. So Raiders of the North Sea came first, then Architects of the West Kingdom, and now there's Paladins of
the
West something.
Japanese Islands.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. We have not played the third one.
Starting to be a theme here.
Did you like Raiders of the North Sea better than...
I do, but again, I don't know if that's because I played it most... That's my most recent play. Architect was... It was really fun because that one, there was much more interaction between the players.
Yes.
You could really alter someone else's game based off of what you're doing and everything. And in Raiders, it wasn't quite the same like that. It was more kind of like your personal, like, this is where I'm going. And as long as someone doesn't take it first.
Yes, I want to get there first. Yep.
Yeah, that's my plan. And
yeah. That for me, that was my favorite gaming experience as well. Same thing. That's what, you know, I'd never played Architects before. That was my first time playing it. Deron taught it to us. I really like it. I own Raiders of the North Sea, and it's one of my favorite games, and we played a bunch. And it was what I liked about it is I introduced it to you and Heather. We played it, and you're immediately like, let's play it again. And yeah. There's not many games that really happens, you know? I mean, Dayron knows. There's a lot of time, especially heavier games. It might be, if it's a light game, like Cat Lady or something, you're like, all right, let's play another another game. And it only takes 10, 15 minutes.
I've almost got the strategy down. I'm so close.
But when you play a Raiders of the North Sea and the game takes an hour and a half, and then immediately you're like, let's play again, and everybody's like, yeah, we're all in, and that's what happened. That's what I thought was really cool.
Like,
it was
yeah, fun. And I think that's good to play again, because it's a game like that, a game like Orleans, where you need to play it once. Yep. You see what kind of strategies you need to use, and then because it's not fair to play those types of games against someone who knows how to play. Almost always they're going to win while you're learning the mechanisms, and then you kind of get an idea of what the end game is and how you could have done better. So it's good that you play those games back to back. That's really
yeah. I think that is key. That's another reason I was like, yeah, let's just play it, because you got it now, and it's the second time around, it really clicks. So Dayron, what else did you like? What other good games did you enjoy there? One of them you bought.
I did. So I bought Space Park, and mm-hmm. that is by Keymaster Games, who did Campy Creatures mm-hmm. and the game Parks,
National Parks. Which I own game. Campy Creatures and you own Parks. Yep.
Right. So I had heard about this game. This is, I think, the first design of the guy who did Parks. I guess all he does is put park in his game. So I don't know what his next game is going to be. So you could definitely tell it was made by the same designer. Park was space theme, and you're just trying to collect gems and explore planets that have points on them, I think. The mechanism of selecting actions was very similar, felt very similar to Parks, but it was compact and simpler. Liked it. It was $20. It was a bargain in my eyes. It was beautifully made. The art's awesome. The components are solid, and I couldn't believe it was $20 when I opened it up. I kind of just bought it based on a brief look at it at the table.
Yeah.
And I liked it. I want to play it again. We only played it that one time there, but I was impressed by it.
Yeah, I liked it too. I played it as well, and I actually had been interested in it before, and I really liked it. I thought it was good. I definitely like Parks a lot too. So
yeah, the art sometimes wins games for me, and like art and components and the gameplay will follow on. As long as it's decent, I'll dig it. And I think that's all of Keymaster's games that I've played.
Yeah.
Those three that we talked about. Yeah. I love them. They're so good. So
good production, good art. Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, solid.
All right, what else do you got? Hey, one more?
The other one I'll talk about, because we all played
it.
Yeah, and this was not a new one, but it was one that I had considered buying before, and when I saw it in Open Gaming, I just grabbed it. I was like, we're playing this.
And I'd never heard of it before.
It's a game called Number 9.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up.
Okay. Yeah, so the premise of this one, this is kind of, it goes against what I usually like, but this is kind of a solitaire puzzle game. We're all drafting these pieces that are odd-shaped, and they're mm-hmm. numbers 0 through 9, and you draft them based on whatever card flips up. And
they're almost like Tetris pieces, but not that simple, more complicated.
If the guy making the Tetris pieces got really hammered and started making pieces.
Yes, basically.
And your goal is to be able to start forming layers you have to have a solid base, and you have to put the other mm-hmm. pieces on top completely. You can't have something overhanging. And it's a really fascinating puzzle. I'm glad we played it, mm-hmm. but I'm glad I didn't buy it, because there's not a lot of replayability. It's the same thing every time.
Yeah.
But I find it interesting to see what order the numbers come out in and what people decide to do with that order. It's interesting for that reason.
What'd you think, Andrew?
I liked it. I don't know that I would buy it either. It's not in my cart yet or anything. But it was a lot of fun, and it was one of those games where every time you play it, you're like, I know I can do better than that next time, you know?
Yeah. I actually think I might buy it. Like, I put it on my wish list and see when the price is right, because I agree, it's a solitaire exercise, but it's fun. And like Andrew said, I'm like, I could do better. I could do better. And there's a luck in terms of, you know, you can't plan too far ahead, because you only see what comes up when it comes up. So if it comes up in bad order, you have bad luck. there's nothing to do. But it's fun. And it's unique. It's like you're stacking these weird shaped tiles. It's very spatial. I liked it a lot. So I thought that was a cool find. Yeah.
I would not be opposed if you bought it. I think Annette would probably feel differently because she probably will hate it because it's not. It's yes. not the theme of number 9 is not accurate to the number 9 or something. Some bizarre.
But there is a number 9 at least.
Yes, that's true.
Agree. It's barely like honestly. I was just playing by myself. It wouldn't feel any different than if you guys are around playing with me. Like it's just like oh, you did better than me. Fine. Like, because it is a solitaire game, but it's a fun activity. I liked it. I thought it was unique. And if the price is right, when I can get it at a right, I'd say $20. I'd probably go in at $20. But
yeah, I have a feeling it'll drop below.
That's what I think too. So I'm gonna keep an eye on it. All right. So that's the games we like. So let's talk about the last few minutes here. Let's talk about any negatives or disappointments with PAX Unplugged. I can start because I had one. Last year, Danique did LARPing. You can go back and listen to our review of PAX Unplugged 2018. Danique did LARPing, and we said this year, we're going to do LARPing, and we did not. And
I so wanted to do it. I don't know how that didn't happen.
We
all wanted to, and we intended to. The issue was there's a lot of stuff to do. And for me, this leads into my other negative, was that the big issue on Saturday was that open gaming was too crowded. We found a good table. Me, Andrew, and Heather, we found a table as soon as we got there, like 1:30. We found a spot at the end of a table. We got really lucky. And we didn't want to leave because we were afraid we'd lose that spot. And we would have lost that spot. And we would have spent, you know, half hour potentially wandering to find a replacement spot just to go LARPing. So we were having fun playing Raiders of the North Sea and other games. So we're like, you know what? We're having a lot of fun. We know if we leave to go LARPing, we're not going to be able to get the spot again. So we parked at that spot at like 1 o'clock on Saturday and didn't leave till like 10 o'clock.
Yeah, true. I think we're going to have to make a concerted effort. Just like we scheduled Blood on the Clock Tower this year, I think we schedule LARPing and we just do it. We dropped the ball and it was from whatever circumstances. That's the last piece of what I think we want to get out of PAX. Like, I think I had like the great PAX experience and yes. except for the LARPing.
I really wanted to.
I probably will hate because I'll be mad that like, I don't know what we're doing and why am I swinging a foam sword, but.
And so if our listeners don't know what LARPing is, it's live action role playing. It's where you get a foam sword.
That's what it is.
You run around, you hit each other with your sword and you yell lightning bolt over and over again.
I don't understand.
I love it.
It's not our thing. We wanted to try it to get the full experience, and we didn't get the opportunity. So that's fine. Next year,
we'll definitely, big bummer.
Yes. So.
And then the year after that, cosplay.
No, it's not going to happen. Not that I have anything against it. It's just I don't know. I don't know.
Every year at PAX we've gone, Dayron, we've seen more people dressed up in costumes than the previous year. So this year we've seen quite a bit. The first year there was very few.
There was a guy or girl in a full Predator costume.
Yeah, that was on Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah.
That was pretty crazy. Yeah. But you didn't see a ton.
Didn't see a ton, but every year it gets a little more. But it's not that type of event.
We did see Gandalf, and that changed my life.
Yes. Next year, Andrew is going to bring his wizard staff, which he does have.
Awesome.
And it lights up.
Unconfirmed.
Amazing. Amazing. I can't.
He will not confirm or deny that, but I know it to be true. So, Dayron, do you have any negatives?
I had an interesting observation, actually. I think you pointed this out. So, very nice and considerate of the PAX tournament or the PAX event to have an all gender bathroom in the expo hall. Whenever, if you want to use it, you can. It's open to all genders. What I found very odd about this is they chose to turn turn one of the men's rooms into the all-gender bathroom. So what this means is, opposed to a bathroom full of stalls, which everybody can go in their individual stall and come out and wash their hands, when people would come out of the stalls, whatever gender they were, they just saw me urinating at the urinal. I was like...
I did follow you in there a few times on purpose.
I was kind of curious to ask people because, you know, to me, whatever you want to do, whatever your choice is, I don't care. But, like, was it weird to see me just standing in the urinal if you were a female or some other, you know, identified gender? Was it, like, weird coming out of the stall and seeing me just standing there peeing? Or was that okay? I don't know
why they chose not to use the women's restroom. The other thing is, it actually was one of the bigger restrooms because some of the ones in the back where we were sitting were pretty small. Yeah. And there was a line a lot of times, and they were not the cleanest. And we were talking, you know, 30,000 plus people. Some of them were, you know, there was no paper towels, there was a line, it was a pain. That was one of the bigger ones. We did send Danique in there one time to check it out.
The all-gender one. I don't think she was happy with us. Probably because she saw some dude peeing at a urinal.
Yeah, that was interesting choice on their part. But that leads me to another negative of mine, is just the venue I felt was overcrowded and that the lack of food within the venue. Like... You had to get food with any reasonable amount of time. You had to go out. You had to go out in the streets of Philly, which is fine, you know. But there was very few options within. In fact, there was one place that if you spent, I don't know what they charge, $20 for free soda refills.
Yeah, you $20, you get like this copper mug.
Yes,
and
you got a mug.
You can get free refills. No, you're spending $20 for soda.
But people were waiting in line for 10 or 15 minutes to refill their soda. It was a line.
It was crazy.
It was crazy. And I just feel like they need to provide more food on site. There's a food court upstairs. It's pretty weak. It's like you wait in line for 20 minutes to get a pizza or whatever. I mean, it just, you know.
Now, did you make it to the end of the vendor hall? There was a grilled cheese place.
Yes.
Which was like a legitimate restaurant that has a stand in there.
Yeah.
And we got the cheeseburger. Grilled cheeseburger, whatever it was. It was expensive, but it was actually good.
How long did you wait, though?
15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's the problem. I mean, I get it. I mean, the convention center is a huge venue, but it doesn't have a lot of these amenities for that many people, you know, so...
Yeah, it's a mixed bag. 'Cause, like, we're from Philly, so it's not that big of a deal for us to go to eat on the streets of Philly. There's the Reading Terminal Market, which is
closes just at like 5 o'clock,
and it closes at 5 o'clock. Yeah. So it's a unique experience for out of towners to do.
Sure,
but they have to do it during
the day. When it came to dinner, we were fortunate enough to have Danique on Saturday go to, where'd she go? Trader Joe's and bring us back in some salads, which is great. And we were fortunate enough to get Howie to smuggle us in 2 bottles of wine.
Yes.
I'm not going to say Howie smuggled them in, but it's
definitely better left unsaid.
Yeah.
Yeah, mainly because Andrew drank most of it.
But he smuggled in 2 bottles of wine, and Danique brought us in dinner because we didn't want to give up our table. We couldn't.
Yeah.
We would not have found another spot that evening.
Yeah.
So that's the other drawback, the overcrowding, just the restrooms, the food within the venue. You know, I mean...
Got one.
Okay.
Especially Friday night when the vendor area was closing, and it was so ridiculous that it almost turned into a positive. All of the announcements for the vendor area to close, like, the vendor area will close in 15 minutes. And then 2 minutes later, they make another announcement.
Yes, they kept over, they're like, attention, please. And you're in the middle of gaming trying to talk. And for probably 15 minutes, they kept announcing, it's about to close.
And, it was and then so they loud. Announced,
it is closed.
Right, so to explain for nobody, for people that haven't been there, it's a big open expo hall, and half of it is where the vendors set up, but that closes at 6. So they basically roll out these like foldable walls from inside the exterior walls and close off and lock the vendor area so that people can leave their booths there. And everybody has to move to open gaming or other areas. But yes, you're sitting there and it's like, this will close in 14 minutes and 30 seconds, 28 seconds.
That was annoying.
And they made a couple of announcements after it had closed, like just to let us know that it was still closed.
Yes. Do you think people where people like hang out in a museum after it closes to like run around a museum after dark? Do you think somebody like sneaks away, hides away in part of the vendor hall?
I imagine they have like roaming patrols in there to catch those type of people.
I just picture somebody just hiding in the bathroom.
Oh, at
10 p.m. coming out and going, yes.
No, I guarantee, because I remember like we talked about before, I like going to motorcycle races, and I camped at Laguna Seca, a famous racetrack in California. And after like 11 o'clock at night, we ran out on the racetrack. Okay. We ran the track, and the patrols came by, and we hid in the porta potties.
Oh my gosh. How old are you?
Well, yeah, I was 2 years ago.
But you're a grown man.
But, so yes, I guarantee somebody was hiding in there, and I think they know that people are going to do that, so they probably have patrols in there to catch those people. But
do you think they use their foam swords to beat people out?
Hopefully, hopefully. So my biggest negative is that they advertise gaming tournaments, and they advertise a lot of them at PAX, but they're pretty small and very difficult to get into. So, for instance, I'd love to play in Dominion, but the tournament caps out at like 32 people.
Yeah.
You know, 32 people out of 30,000, and in order to get an entry, you have to be there. Okay, the hall opens at 10 o'clock. You got to get in line at like 8 o'clock in the morning to sign up for the tournament for 32 people.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And I think we're kind of spoiled we have a negative impression of it because we go to the WBCs, which is tournament based, and you can basically, as many copies of the game you have, you can have
as many people show up 5 minutes before it starts and you're in.
And I just don't know. I don't have a basis of comparison other than that, but it seems odd that they just limit it. And they have bizarre games in tournaments. Yeah. You know the game Drop It? I played that with my 5 and 7 year olds, that you drop shapes in a tower. Like, that's a tournament. Really?
So for really hardcore gamers, the tournaments, I feel, are like they tack that on as part of your admission. Oh, look, you can enter these tournaments. But really, you can't, because it's too hard to get into. They're so limited. And that's fine. I agree. If you really want to be competitive, go to WBCs. This is not a competitive event or venue. But I'd rather see the tournaments a little more accessible if you're really going to advertise tournaments. It's too hard to get into, and it's just not a Dominion tournament with 32 people is just not realistic, you know?
Yeah. I'd be curious to talk to somebody who plays in one of them or organizes them and just kind of find out like what's the thinking behind it. But whatever. I mean, that's why we have the WBCs, and we go there. We don't even play in tournaments, so I don't know why.
Yeah, why no. Exactly. So that's the only other negative I had. Do you guys have any other negatives about PAX Unplugged?
None for me.
No, I mean,
no.
Overall, this is a great event. So I really had fun. This is our third year. We've gone every one. The big question, we'll start with you, Andrew. If you had to drive 5 hours to get to PAX Unplugged, would you attend? Everything else being the same, we have the unique situations in our backyard. A lot of people come from all over, and you know, we talk to people who came from all over. Would you drive 5 hours to attend PAX Unplugged?
Probably not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to say no. Maybe in a few years, if I continue down this route of loserdom.
Not a real word.
Yeah.
Dayron, what do you think?
I think that's an easy no for me. Yeah. I mean, we kill packs in the fact that like our entry fee is $70 for the weekend. We don't pay for parking because we park at our office. Yeah. I mean, the people that drive there, $30 a day for parking, hotel rooms if they're from out of town, a plane flight.
Yeah.
For what? Like, it's a really cool experience, but if I was going to spend that much money, I want to go on a real vacation. I mean, we go to WBCs for 9 days for, I think, probably less than most people paid to come to PAX for 2 days if they got a hotel room.
No, you're right. Parked. Yeah. No, yeah. I agree. I think it's unanimous. I say no, I wouldn't either. I mean, it's fun, but the open gaming is not as comfortable as WBCs. You know, or even as comfortable as my own house with my friends, you know. And it's cool. The vendor area is really cool, but we're not really, you know, the caveat is we're not really into, I don't need the newest game right away. Like, if that's what you're about, then cool. This is a great place for that. If you're about going, attending some of these talks, which, you know, we've done it, and I'm like, nah, it's not really my thing. There's a lot of variety here. And if you're new to board gaming as a hobby, you can explore a ton of different things. But honestly, like, mostly for me, I just want to play games, hang out with friends. It's not even the best place to meet new people, I'd say, because WBCs, we've met a ton of people.
Yeah. But
in this place, it's so crowded. I mean, it's... You don't find as many people like, hey, we're looking for people to play games.
Right.
Whereas WBCs, you can always go in like, hey, I'm looking for somebody to play a game, and you can within a few minutes find people. So, I wouldn't travel that far for it. I will continue to go to it when it's in our backyard, but I wouldn't drop a ton of money on it.
If it moved to, let's say, New York, I don't think I would go.
No.
Unless I stay at a friend's place. Like, I don't think I would go. I enjoyed it thoroughly, and I will go back again next year. I'll go every year that it's in Philly, and we'll do all those fun things, but I don't think I would go if it was 2 hours away.
And, you know, we also take for granted, we're from Philly. If you're visiting, I think a lot of the people that came in, part of it is like, hey, you get to visit Philly. You get to go to the Reading Terminal Market. You get to see all the history around there. A lot of people come in Thursday to experience Philly, and it is a great city for that.
They get urinated on by homeless people. It's great. Exactly. Fun times.
You know, but when we go to WBCs, it's in Seven Springs, which is outside of Pittsburgh. There's nothing really there besides WBC. If you're saying, hey, I'm going to make this a vacation, Philly's a good city to visit. There's a lot of stuff to see and do there for the price of coming here. So, you know, we take that for granted that, you know, so.
Absolutely.
I think that I think is a great city for this event.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
So with that, I think that wraps up our PAX Unplugged 2019 review. Andrew, thank you for being on the podcast. Was it as painful as you anticipated?
Not quite. But, we'll see. We'll see how I feel in the morning.
I could actually see him crying from here. Well, Dayron, before we go, we have to mention the most important thing. We alluded to. We didn't talk about it, but during PAX, we had the opportunity to interview one of our favorite designers, Steve Finn.
Yep.
So I think we both ranked that up there as one of our favorite experiences.
Yes.
And we will be debuting that interview in our next episode. We didn't want to include it here because it was just going to be too long.
Yeah, it's a whole separate experience. But yes, on Sunday we went back to interview Steve Finn of Dr. Finn's Games. He made games like Biblios and Let Them Eat Shrimp and
Cosmic Run Regeneration. Cosmic
Run, a lot of games we play and own. So he took time out to speak with us on Sunday. So our next episode will be that interview of Dr. Finn. I think it's a really good one. It was a lot of fun just to have that experience as well. So
yeah,
that
was, awesome that was guy.
Cool. Yeah,
awesome guy. A lot of fun doing the interview. So if you like any of his games, and you want to hear us embarrass ourselves, probably I don't remember what we said, but listen, tune into our next episode, and he's also got a Kickstarter coming out.
Yep.
So we'll check that out soon.
Excellent. So with that, Andrew, thanks for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was a blast.
No problem. And thanks, everybody, for listening.
Now, Andrew's got to take us out.
Oh, I get to say it?
Yes.
All right, see you guys.
No. Oh!
No, sayonara.
Yes.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. For more information about the podcast, check out www.boardgamesareforlosers.com. If you have questions that you want answered on the show, or if you just want to tell us that you still think we're losers, you can email us at boardgamelosers@gmail.com. You can chat with other losers in our forums over at boardgamegeek.com by visiting guild number 3300. And don't forget to check out our amazing board game photography on Instagram by following @boardgamelosers.